From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. With the switch to remote learning and many people working from home, the pandemic reminded us of the importance of high-speed internet access and highlighted the digital divide that exists between those with it and without it across Illinois. Since 2019, both the state and federal government have passed infrastructure programs that invest a combined $500 million to expand broadband internet access across the state. A recent report by the University of Illinois Project for Middle Class Renewal and the Illinois Economic Policy Institute outlines how a lack of internet access and income inequality are deeply intertwined. The report estimates that with nearly 240,000 households, businesses, and farms gaining access, wages will be boosted, thousands of short and long-term jobs will be created, and earning potential will be increased. With us now to talk more about the economic and social effects of high-speed internet access is one of the authors of the report. Andrew Wilson is a policy analyst for the Illinois Economic Policy Institute. Andrew, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
And listeners, you can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455, especially if you live in an area that is still underserved by internet access. We'd love to hear about it and what your experience has been. Have you seen it improving recently? Again, 800-222-9455 or tweet us at 21st Show at 21st Show. So, Andrew, some 83% of Illinoisans have internet access. That number is expected to grow to 87%. Let's just talk about some basics here. How do you define internet access, and how did you analyze census data to get those numbers?
Certainly. So we viewed high-speed internet as defined by the FCC as 25 megabits down. That's kind of the average you'll see. And in the report, there's a graph or a map that shows most of Illinois has some sort of access. What we also looked at, though, was data from Microsoft that utilized when people connected to their services, what their internet was like. And that shows there's a very stark difference between what the census and the FCC sees in Illinois and what Microsoft and people who are connecting to their cloud services see. And so we use that kind of as the basis to show where is the internet and how fast are people connected to it.
Interesting. And so what about how do you estimate who doesn't, like what number of people do and do not have internet access?
So right now we estimate that there is about 16% of Illinois that doesn't have access to broadband. And this investment will bring it up to, a quarter of that 16% missing. So 500,000 people. So just $1 billion gets you 500,000 people. So it's a good start, but there's a long way to go.
What do you say? I know that among the people who do not have access is my grandmother, who's 106. I don't think she's would be using internet. Probably a lot of her neighbors in the assisted living facility would not be using it either. I mean, what do we know or what do we not know about who is in that percentage of people who don't have this access so far?
No, that's a good point. I think that there will be people who choose to not have internet. They don't see a need for it. But I think there's a lot more of a result that people can't get access to it, either in rural areas because we haven't put down fiber out there, that it's expensive to lay down fiber very far out into rural areas. And we also see people who couldn't necessarily afford it in cities because it's very expensive for the last mile. The last bit of internet costs a lot because it's the interaction between internet providers and the customer. And usually they'll push that cost onto the customers. And that's not always a cost people can afford currently.
And then just while we're still on this point of like talking about the numbers, how does Illinois compare to other states in terms of access?
Illinois does very well. We have a major city with Chicago that has a lot of internet, and we're very forward-thinking in our investments in infrastructure, not just internet, but roads, as I'm sure everyone's seen traffic-wise, that we like to fix our roads.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So let me just take a moment to remind listeners, if you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We've been speaking with Andrew Wilson, who's a policy analyst for the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and a co-author of a report that looks at the state's broadband, the economic, fiscal, and social effects of public investments in broadband internet access in Illinois is the title of it, actually. And we're joined now by Dr. Robert Bruno, who's a professor at the U of I School of Labor and Employment Relations and director of the Project for Middle Class Renewal. Professor Bruno, welcome back to the 21st Show. Thanks for being with us. And Dr. Bruno, are you there? I understand we've had a couple of issues with our phone lines this morning. Don't know if you might be muted. All right. Well, while our producer and engineer seeks to troubleshoot what's happening there, Andrew, let me come back to you then and ask there's this idea that increased internet access is going to lead to higher paying jobs. Can you walk me through how an expansion of internet access could boost wages and earning potential?
Certainly. So with the pandemic, we saw a very big shift to work from home. And those jobs, we realized, can be done anywhere. And so people in areas that don't have the economic capacity now have that ability, that you can work for any company in the world from anywhere in the world as long as you have internet. I am doing this interview from my apartment in sweatpants. I can do my job anywhere. And so you see that people who work in those fields that have that capacity can now work anywhere. And so people who are in those rural areas or wish to move to those rural areas now have the ability to take on those jobs that are traditionally higher paying.
Okay. And Professor Bruno, I think I can hear you on the line now. You're with us.
Yes.
All right. Thanks.
The technology is working now.
Speaking of broadband access and technological access, let me ask you about that in terms of economic activity tied to this. I mean, there's also there's the sort of the downstream effects of the workers who can, as Andrew said, work in their sweatpants or shorts, remotely. But there's also construction jobs, right? Other economic boosters. Go ahead.
I think we need to think about a broadband. We need to think about internet access. It is a technology, and more broadly, think about how do we distribute in an equitable way the technology that is necessary to be a productive contributor, whether you're the employer, small business, or whether you're an employee in the economy. And in the same way that years ago, and we continue to look for certain skills like writing skills and certain ability to do mathematics and maybe to be able to use whatever the tools, right, the technology is of a particular job, we should think of broadband internet access as a job competency. And having that competency will create greater opportunities for you. It'll make you more competitive as an employee, and as a business, you will find efficiencies that will be generated because, quite frankly, in almost every industry, there is interaction. There is work that's being done over the internet. So this is this technology is a job competency, and we want to develop it in employees, and we certainly want to make it accessible to people who want to be entrepreneurial and to grow businesses. And in the same way that a good, solid apprenticeship program to develop skills and use tools would then create economic opportunity for you and greater value for your employer, so too will be this technology, which is, sort of the tip of the iceberg, if you will, of the kind of technology that's being developed using, broadband, for example.
So that's, you said defining broadband access as a job competency. And I understand that the analysis showed that those with internet access were more likely to be employed than those with no access. It's not a great number, 1% difference, but I mean, that is thousands of jobs, paying tens of thousands of dollars a year. And can you talk about how things like that, as well as, the study controlled for things like marital status, household size, gender identification, race, education, how that all factors into internet access?
Sure, and I want to also invite Andrew, who did a lot of great number crunching and analysis here in this, to respond to this. But what I would note is that you are raising the value producing capacity of that employee when that employee comes with a competency in utilizing the internet and not being intimidated by it and being comfortable with it and understanding how it might very well get utilized in a particular job and how it might distinguish you from another employee. So it is in raising your skill level, your competency level. Think of it as a kind of literacy that's being developed in a contemporary, modern, internet-driven economy. You are demonstrating the value, the added value that you can bring to the production process. And that can be a distinguishing variable between you and another employee. And it can make you, once employed, that much more capable and valuable to that in employer. And all things else being equal, controlling statistically, we do find that it has this advantage. And as you say, it may be relatively small percentage, but it actually touches on the lives of a fair number of people. But it also makes those people who are employed that much more valuable, kind of a value add once you're employed, which we didn't really sort of get into in the report. But I'll invite Andrew if he'd like to add to that.
No, I think you did quite a good job. The goal was to try to remove as much noise as possible to just try to get what internet alone does to an individual in terms of earning potential. And so we tried to make it as neutral as possible.
So Andrew, there's not just earning potential here at issue, right? There's other aspects, and you call these social aspects as opposed to economic aspects of internet access. Can you talk about what falls under that?
Yes, the economic aspects of the internet were pretty quickly realized in the 90s and commercialized. And so we really see the impact economically of the internet. But with technology, we see that the social impacts of a technology always seem to lag behind. And we are now just kind of seeing through research what kind of social impacts the internet is causing and the positives and negatives of that. And so we get things like telehealth, we get things like connecting people. I remember when long distance calls were very expensive. Now you can talk to your grandparents for pennies. So you're seeing all these interconnections now that we've kind of made the world a smaller place, just as ship technology and planes made the world smaller. The internet is bringing people closer together.
Oh my gosh, can I tell you a brief story? About 10 years ago, I was working at the State Journal Register newspaper in editing the arts and entertainment section, and I had to interview a conductor in London who was coming to Illinois, and it was something like a $600 phone bill that I accidentally and sort of inadvertently racked up, and now it would have been right a free Zoom call. So definitely right. feel you on that. Andrew, there's also this urban-rural divide in Illinois, right? Is that the main digital divide here, or where do you see it?
We see it mostly along kind of economic lines. With new technology, there's always a cost for early adopters. And historically, where has money been in Illinois? It's been in the cities, specifically the business areas and the suburbs. And so we see that Southern Chicago and rural Illinois suffer greatly because when the investment needed to happen, they didn't have the money. And you see that a similarity with the Tennessee Valley Authority as part of FDR's New Deal to electrify rural America is that the places that had the economic investment when electricity was brand new used it and benefited from it. And the places that couldn't invest it fell behind. And FDR felt that they needed to bring those areas up to equal with the rest of the country and used it as a form of economic development. And when you look at the internet as a utility today, you can do the same thing. You can use the internet as economic development for certain areas.
Professor Bruno, we're running short on time before we need to take a break, mm-hmm. but briefly, what is considered affordable when we're talking about internet access?
Well, that's a very that's a really good question. I think something that, quite frankly, is within the which is within the reach of everyone, frankly, regardless of your social economic status, and that means it may need to be subsidized and made available to those with the lowest of economic means. But clearly, as affordable, if we're talking about it being sort of a tool that's democratized and that is available to everyone, then it can't be dependent on one's economic capacity to pay to sort of get initial access. And that's where this public investment, this sort of TVA-like investment in broadband is so important. If we mean affordable, then it actually has to be not dependent on the fact that you know you're earning at a certain rate of pay as opposed to someone else. And I really do think we can address that with this large public investment, state and federal.
All right, we're going to continue this conversation and wrap up when we come back from our break. You're listening to The 21st Show. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about a new report that looks at the economic and social effects of broadband internet access, specifically about $500 million in state and federal investment in broadband internet access in Illinois that have been passed in recent pieces of legislation. We're speaking with Andrew Wilson from the Illinois Economic Policy Institute and Professor Robert Bruno from the University of Illinois School of Labor and Employment Relations. He's also director of the Project for Middle Class Renewal there. So what, Andrew, what would it take to see total internet access across Illinois? What even is, you know, what would be considered, right? Like, full employment is never going to be 0% unemployment. So what would be full internet access in Illinois?
No, you're right. I think that there will always be people who choose not to have internet for whatever reason. And so you'd probably want to see, you know, the 95 to 99% coverage. And I think that the money side isn't a huge issue, because this investment will pay for itself with the increased wages, with the increased TAC revenue in, you know, under 10 years. And so if it takes $1 billion or $2 billion to hit that full coverage, it's not a huge issue in the long term that it'll be a cost we need to worry about.
And Bob Bruno, anything you want to add to that specifically about the, you know, the potential fiscal effects, the government finances, or take it where you will in conclusion of our conversation?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Brian. I think Andrew nicely noted that this is an investment that has a really high return on investment, and it will pay for itself, and then will continue to compound. What I would note is, you know, think about the alternative to making such an investment and to getting as close to 100% as you can. If you don't do that, you really are going to leave behind large numbers of people in this state, and they are going to be disproportionately people who are in lower socioeconomic conditions. You're going to impact more negatively people of color. You're going to impact more negatively folks who are living further afield from large metropolitan areas, which means you're not really going to have an equitable, growing economy. And if we're talking about what the future of work is going to be, we should be talking about how it brings all of our citizens and all of their productive capacity really into the marketplace, and what a good place, if you will, for public policy to be to actually use these assets in a way that actually diversifies, creates a more equitable economy, helps, if you will, labor incomes to grow, helps businesses to expand, and does a better job, if you will, in equalizing the wealth creation. in the state, so that it so that people of color have greater access, and that we can actually move people who are lower on the economic ladder into the middle class. So I think there's an there's a question of being equitable in this investment, and it really does offer a lot of potential in that regard.
All right. If people want to take a look at the report, we'll have a link to it on our website, which is 21stshow.org. Bob Bruno and Andrew Wilson, thank you so much for being with us to talk about it today on the 21st Show.
Thank you for having me, Brian.
Great to be with you.